field that the Lord God had made. He said to the woman, "Did God actually say, 'You shall not eat of any tree in the garden?'" And the woman said to the serpent, "We may eat of the fruit of the tree in the garden. But God said, 'You shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that is in the midst of the garden, neither shall you touch it, lest you die.'" But the serpent said to the woman, "You will not surely die. For God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was a delight to the eyes, the tree was to be desired to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. And she gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate. I think you remember the rest of the story, right? The rest of the story is, they violated what God said, and they did die. And they were driven from the garden. Right? And, you know, how that she could have justified this in her mind. You know, God had clearly told Adam and Eve, if you eat of the fruit, you're going to die. But the serpent was still able to deceive her into thinking that that was okay. Now, it's possible that she either chose not to believe what God said and to believe the serpent's lies, or maybe she pushed it out of her mind long enough to not think about it long enough to justify it. Maybe that's what she did. Because I think that's what we struggle with sometimes. But regardless of what happened, here are some things that she used in her mind to justify this. She saw that it was good for food, right? It was edible. She saw that it was a delight to the eyes. Apparently it looked really good. And it was to be desired to make one wise. So there was an appeal there from several different ways that she, in her mind, thought, this would be okay to do this. And she pushed it out of her mind long enough to say, I'm going to go ahead and do it. And her husband participated with her. Well, when she did that, death entered the world. And because all of us sin, right, according to Romans, the 5th chapter, verse 12, death passes to all of us. And it is a reality that we must live with. Now, do you like thinking about that? I don't. I don't like thinking about it. And I can't say that I think about it a great deal of the time. I think about it more than I used to. But it seems like it's something still out there in the future. And in reality, we have no guarantees of that. So I want to talk with you this morning about the idea of that we're going to live forever. And I know none of us really think that, but at your ages in particular, it is something that you don't think will happen to you. Our lives are compared to a vapor or a fog. Let's look over at James, the 4th chapter. You're probably familiar with this verse, right? James 4:14 says, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such and such a town, and we'll spend a year there, and we'll trade and make profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time, and then vanishes." Remember seeing a fog, maybe on a fall morning after it's been damp overnight, and fog is formed, and it's kind of hard to drive. No, you don't get out that early in the morning, right? But I do. I go to work sometimes, if I can get there early enough, by 6:30. And a lot of times, in the spring in particular, or in the fall, there'll be a pretty thick fog to deal with. You can't see. But by mid-morning, it's gone. And God is likening our lives to that span of time. Psalms 103, in verse 15. The Bible here is, and this is one of many passages that compares our lives to a plant of the field or a flower of the field. "As for man, his days are like grass. He flourishes like a flower of the field. For the wind passes over it and it is gone, and in its place knows it no more." We have some roses that are blooming. We have a rose bush that we planted near our house, and it's been producing some beautiful roses. In fact, they had several on there this morning. But those are not going to last. Eventually, they're going to dry up and they're going to wilt and they're going to fall away, and we're not even going to remember that they were ever there. God is likening our lives to that. Well, consider Psalms, the 90th chapter. Well, I got a little ahead of myself, didn't I? Even if we live 70 or 80 years, Psalms, the 90th chapter, this is a passage that contrasts the eternal nature of God with the temporary nature of us, right, of our lives. Look at verse 9 in particular. For all our days pass away under your wrath. We bring our years to an end like a sigh. The years of our life are 70, or even by reason of strength, 80. Yet their span is but toil and trouble. They are soon gone and we fly away. Even if you were to live 80 years, it's really not that long. Now, I went to the internet and pulled down some statistics that might be of interest to you. Average life expectancy. Average. Which means you take everybody that lives from 1 hour all the way up to 110. Or like my grandfather who passed away last October at 101, almost 102. You put all these people together and you average them, and worldwide the average life expectancy is over 66 years. That's a long time, right? Seems like a long time. In the United States, it's even higher than that. Let's all move to Monaco, right? Live almost 90 years. That's the average, see? But stay away from Angola. And again, this includes everybody. From a statistical standpoint, from an odds standpoint, and may the odds be ever in your favor when it comes to that kind of thing, right? Some of the guys in the back are looking kind of funny, like, what's he talking about? No. But odds are, you might live a long time, relatively speaking. But even if you live a long time, it is still not a long time. Does that make sense? Well, I've got a little comparison. I know you know who Thomas Jefferson is. He lived to be the age of 83. He had several children, two of which I want to use as an example here. One of his children, Mary, lived to be the age of 25 when she died. He had a daughter that is referred to as Lucy Elizabeth II, because there was Lucy Elizabeth I who died at age 1. Then they had another daughter that they also named Lucy Elizabeth. She lived to be 2. And you can see from that, from this little graph, and this is relatively done to scale, as good as PowerPoint would do, and you can see he lived a lot longer than those two children, didn't he? But let's expand the comparison to something longer than that. Let's compare their lives of 83 and 25 and 2 to the time in which, since the time he was born, 272 years since he was born to now. Okay, he still lived a good bit longer, but it's not as pronounced. Let's go a little further and expand the scale even further out to the time of the arrival of Columbus in 1492. The differences between Thomas and Mary and Lucy don't seem to be that significant. Let's go one further. Since Christ, that's an approximate age. I wouldn't be dogmatic about exactly how many years it's been since Christ, but for our purposes it serves as a good comparison. Do you see a lot of difference between those three? And the point I want to make is, what if we drew a line that represented 100,000 years? The differences would become less pronounced. The point I want to make is, even if we live a long time here on earth, relatively speaking, we still, in terms of eternity, don't live a very long time. But it is how we live during that short period of time in which we are here, in which we live, is what dictates how we will live eternally. And that's the point we want to get across. So I hope that little example will help you there. See. So, again, though our lives are very brief, God still recognizes the relative difference between a short life and a long life. I won't read the passage, but Psalm 91, it's a messianic psalm in general, but I think there's an application beyond that as well to us. Long life is described as a reward. In Job, the 12th chapter, wisdom is more associated with age. Go to verse 12 of chapter 12 of verse Job. Job says, wisdom is with aged men and length of days understanding. Why do you think that's the case? I know it's early. You have longer to learn. You get to experience more, right? You have more time to see more things happen. You have more time to have experienced it yourself. You will have more time to see experiences of others as well, right? So, it's really true that the older you get, the wiser you get, generally speaking. I see some people my age, I'm not sure if they're ever going to acquire much wisdom, but that's due to a lot of choices that they've made. But generally speaking, that is the case. Well, it is a time in which you have some advantages, right? It's a time when you can pursue things that interest and please you. Turn over to the 11th chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes. And this chapter in particular has a lot of relevance, I think, to this discussion and to you in particular at this point in your lives. Ecclesiastes 11, verse 9, "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes, but know that for all these things God will bring you into judgment." So, is that just a blank check of saying, hey, I'm going to go out and pursue anything that makes me happy or whatever pleases me? I mean, it does say, walk in the ways of your heart, let your heart cheer you. God will bring you into judgment for these things. That's the limit, right? That's the thing we have to consider. It's a time when you don't have the physical pains that you're going to have later on. Turn over to just one chapter beyond this one, chapter 12. "Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them." And he begins to paint a mental picture here for us, of kind of a dark scene, almost a little town where people have shut their when I read those passages, this particular passage, I think kind of a quiet, dark street. Late in the day, it's cloudy. People have shut their windows. There's not a lot of sound going on. And the idea here is, if you look at verse 3, "In the day when the keepers of the house tremble and strong men are bent," verse 4, "and the doors on the street are shut when the sound of the grinding is low, and one rises up at the sound of a bird, and all the daughters of song are brought low." Second part of verse 5, "The grasshopper drags itself along. Desire fails because man is going to his eternal home and mourners go about in the streets." Kind of a dim picture, isn't it? And look at the analogy here in verse 6. And a lot of people think these are actually references or analogies to parts of the body. I'm not sure if that's the case, but I can get the point. "Before the silver cord is snapped or the golden bowl is broken or the pitcher is shattered at the fountain or the wheel broken at the cistern, dust returns to the earth as it was, and the spirit returns to God, who gave it." He's painting a picture of there's a time coming when things won't work as well. And you will not have the ability to live then as you now. But what he is saying is, what does he say to remember during all that? Very first verse. "Remember your Creator the days of your youth before these days come." Don't wait until those days come to decide to start living righteously and live for God. That's the point that he's making. It is a time when you won't have the financial obligations that you'll have later. You know, most of you are relatively young. You don't have families of your own. So you don't have those obligations to take care of children. And probably most of your parents are not yet at an age where you need to help take care of them. That time is coming. And you'll need to meet those responsibilities if that arises. But at this time and age, you're probably not going to have that. So you've got some advantages. You're not as likely to resist change. The older you get, the harder it's going to be to change. I don't have a good explanation for that. But I can see it in my own body. I can see it in my own life. Sometimes you get a little older and your body don't work as well, and you just don't want to go to the trouble that you once did to do things. So, and the example I have here, and thanks to Steve Klein for helping me find that example, Barzillai. Remember who he was? He was a man that came to the aid of David as David had to flee from Jerusalem because his son Absalom was rebelling and basically coming and taking over, and David and those who accompanied him had to leave, and they had to go and basically had to flee as a result of Absalom's group coming. And he came to the aid of David. Well, what happened to Absalom? He died, right? He died young. And when David was making his way back after that rebellion was put down, he saw Barzillai and basically said, Barzillai, I want you to come back and live in Jerusalem with me. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to provide your food. And Barzillai didn't want to do that because he was 80 years old and he was old. And he wanted to stay in his own town and he wanted to die there. He said, I can't really enjoy those things anymore. He resisted change when he got older. And the other thing I want to mention here, and I hope that you won't have to do this, but you can recover from mistakes. And what I mean is, there are some that I've seen over the years. It happened when I was a teenager, and it's happened every time since. Some who make pretty big mistakes and maybe damage their reputations. You can recover. And you can rebuild your good name. And you'd be surprised at how people forget and how people will respect you for that. Better not to have to do it. But if you have, you can rebuild your reputation. Because you have some time to do that. But regardless of our age, whatever experiences we might have, we have to remember that our lives may end at any time. Turn back to Ecclesiastes, the 9th chapter. Verse 11. I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill, but time and chance happen to them all. For man does not know his time. Like fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare, so the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it suddenly falls upon them. We don't know what may happen to us. That could happen at any time, even though statistically speaking, we may have many more years from that standpoint. We can't count on that. Look over at Proverbs, the 27th chapter. This is going to sound very familiar to the verse we just read from the book of James. It sounds like a companion verse to it. And maybe James had that in mind when he wrote this, of course, by inspiration. It reads, this is Proverbs 27:1. Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring. You don't. Back in 1984, the last December of the year, the last Saturday of the year in the latter part of December, I was standing outside, let me get myself oriented here. That's east, right? I was standing outside at the McDonald's up here on Highway 31. Now some of you who are out of town won't know what I'm talking about probably. Most of you will. I'll be a mile from here if that much. I was standing out there with a friend of mine and we were talking. And a mutual friend, acquaintance, whatever you want to call him, came up. And he rolled the window down and he talked for us for a few minutes and he went on his way. We went on ours and didn't think any more about it. Next morning, I got up and went to church as I did with my family. And after services, I started going to the car and an elderly man came up to me. He said, did you know, or do you know, he called off the name of the young man that had driven up and talked to us. This was like Saturday night. It was dark. I don't remember what time it was that he had talked to. And I said, yeah, I know him. I just talked to him last night. He said he died last night. And I have to tell you, that still shakes me up. He died. I talked to him no more than a few hours before he died. He had no idea. I had no idea. That was 30 years ago. He was not a Christian. That shook me up. And I remember he was going uptown the next day, coming up here, and the guy that was with me, he did the same thing, and we met up and talked about it, because it shook us both up. Now, I don't want you to have to act like I'm trying to scare you in one sense, in another sense, maybe I am. Be prepared for that if it happens. Don't wait. Don't think there's some time coming later on in your life that will take care of things and be more spiritual. because if you keep waiting, that time. So that's why we have this kind of discussion. We want to remind you. Our goal is to be resurrected with Christ, with Christ living in us, so that we can live forever. And I'm going to speed up a little bit because of time. There are some things that will cloud your focus and have, and make you forget about this if you're not careful. And the same thing applies to me as well. I know you heard some things last night with respect to money, material things. I'm not going to repeat preach that, but I will say this. You know, the Bible encourages industriousness. It encourages hard work. It includes planning for the future. Job, Abraham were very rich men. But if that becomes our focus, and if that becomes the thing that identifies us, then we've got problems because we're putting ourselves in a position that we're going to trust in those things. And we think that's going to take care of us. And I know you heard some good teaching on that last night. I won't go over that. I won't repeat all that today. But I hope you listened. I hope you thought about that last night, because riches have a tendency to make us forget about what's coming and only focus on the here and now. There's another area I want to discuss with you. It is our focus on the external. Right? The external body. Attractiveness. Working out. Being in shape. Is there anything wrong with any of that? In and of itself, it is not. Consider, and I've got some verses here for you to think about. Again, we won't turn to all of these. You remember after Job had remained faithful to God, even though he did some foolish things and said some foolish things, he never totally gave up on God, and God restored Job all that he had lost, and he had sons and daughters. It says Job's daughters were the most beautiful in the land. That was a blessing from God. Sarah. You remember when Abraham and Sarah were going down into Egypt? What was Abraham worried about? People would kill him to get Sarah. Why were they interested in Sarah? He was good looking, as Paul said. He was very beautiful. He was beautiful. He said that to her, his wife, and the Egyptians said, it uses the term very beautiful in the version that I read. Is that what you think about when you think of Sarah? I don't. Not typically. You realize that Sarah is mentioned in 1 Peter 3. You remember that's a discussion about how a woman is not to put too much emphasis on the external, fixing her hair and her clothes and her jewelry. Yet, Sarah is mentioned in that context, particularly with respect to the subjection that she showed to her husband. And that's part of that discussion as well. But she's cited as an example. A very beautiful woman is cited as an example in that context of one who, I believe, embodied those characteristics. So it's nothing wrong with being beautiful. There's nothing wrong with doing some things to make yourself more attractive in and of itself. Think about it. The instruction that Naomi gave Ruth, and at the end there's a long story there, but the story of Ruth was such that they went back to Judah. Of course, Ruth, by this point, was a widow. And Naomi, and they had met Boaz, and Boaz was a man who would be a potential candidate, again, according to the law and the customs of that day, to take her to be his wife. And she basically told Naomi basically told Ruth, you know, wash yourself, anoint your hair with oil, which probably would have smelled good, put on your best clothes and go down there to where he is. Nothing wrong with it in and of itself. But when that becomes the focus, and that becomes the thing that we're identified by, then we got our priorities out of place. Think about being in shape. Because it will not last. And I have seen, in the 51 years I've lived, I have seen people, and I can think back of people who were good looking, Paul says. I'm thinking of one in particular. I saw the pictures of her on social media just recently on her husband's site. She was a very pretty girl, raised very similar circumstances as many of you and I. Very pretty girl. But if you saw her today, you would not think that. Because time has a way of leveling that playing field. And she doesn't stand out that much. So if you put your focus on that, you're putting your focus on something that's not going to last. So I hope you're seeing the balance there. It's okay if you're fortunate enough to be attracted, but don't rely on it. And don't make your choices based on that kind of thing. The benefits of physical exercise are limited. What does it say in 1 Timothy 4 and verse 8? Body exercise profits little. What about godliness? Godliness is good. It profits not only in this life, but the life to come. It's like making an investment. Right? You're going to throw your money into an investment that's going to pay off, or you're going to throw your money into one that's not going to pay off. Put it in godliness, because that will pay off. But I've seen a lot of people that I've known over the years who've gotten caught up in sports and ball, and a lot of them today will be on ball fields today dragging their little kids to play 3 or 4 games in a day, and some of them turn around and do it tomorrow and not worry about church services or worshiping services, or if they do, it'll be some farce of a service in a hotel room that's really not that meant. Really, it's not that good. Because the authority is on ball. Here's another area. Poor choices of companions. I'm going to hurry now. Bad company corrupts good morals. I think you know that. And most of us know to stay away from the most worldly, wicked people in terms of participating in it. I'm not saying we shouldn't try to teach people like that. We should. And some of them can be converted. But participating with them in that is the wrong thing to do. But it may not always be the most worldly people. It may be people like you. The story that I have cited there from 2 Chronicles, the 24th chapter, and 2 Kings 12, is the story about Jehoash, or Joash, depending on which account you read. And he did really well while Jehoiada the priest was in his life. And he was a good king, even was responsible for repairing the temple and made sure that happened. But after that, when Jehoiada died, these princes or officials or leaders, depending on the version you read, they came and they influenced him. And they abandoned the house of the Lord and they went and worshiped idols. Unbelievable. And if you look at those officials, you think about those people. They were Jews like him. They were from leading families like he was. And they were among the very people who were rejoicing when they were raising money back when Jehoiada lived to repair the temple. They were out there rejoicing. Some of the people who may be the worst influence on you may be people who are very similar to you in nature, but maybe not as convicted. You need to be careful about the people that you choose when you're close to families, people that you bring in. That will cause you to not think about the future. I have Solomon cited as an example. The wisest man who ever lived allowed pagan women to influence him to worship idols. It's unbelievable. But the thing is, the point is, it can happen to him, it can happen to us. Beware of the influences that you're seeing on a regular basis, or even a sporadic basis, from social media, the digital age in which we live, particularly this time of year. There are people who are not that concerned about how they dress or how they appear. And I will suggest to you, if you've got people, if that's showing up in your news feed, on your site that you're seeing, you need to get rid of those people. Because they're focusing on the temporary, and it will cause you to focus on the temporary. And I know you're going to hear some more about worldliness and pornography later on, so I'll leave that for those discussions. Focus on your career or education. I know a lot of you are still in high school. You may not be to a point where you're making those decisions, but I know a lot of you are in college and you are making a lot of decisions with respect to that. And you're determining, what your career is going to be. And there, you can have a great emphasis on worldly wisdom. Acquiring knowledge is not sinful. Solomon was very knowledgeable about all sorts of things. God gave him that. But wisdom and knowledge can bring weariness. Turn over to Ecclesiastes, the first chapter. We're going to hit the first chapter, and then we're going to go later on to the end of the book. Verse 16. I thought I had this in my notes. There it is. For in much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. chapter 12 and verse 12, of the making of many books, there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh. You're in college, you probably felt that way a few times, haven't you? I remember feeling pretty weary studying myself as well. 1 Corinthians 1 tells us, not many wise, not many important people are called. So be careful as you go out into the world and you advance in terms of your education and careers. You need to be careful that that does not influence you into forgetting about what's really important and forgetting that you are only here for a few short years, but how you live is going to dictate how you spend eternity. So, all of our decisions and goals have to be made with this thing in mind. And these are just a few. What will my career be? Is it going to be one that I can worship God? What will I choose? Who will I choose for my companions or mates? Am I going to base it just on the pretty girl? Pretty girl may not be the one that helps you get to heaven. Right? Or the guy with the great career ahead of him is going to have money for you to use and travel and have a big house. That may not help you get to heaven. My priorities, the entertainment, how I dress, all of that has to be shaped, molded, and formed through the understanding of that I am temporary. How many of you have been Christians for 5 years? About 10. You know, and not as many hands went up then, but I bet a lot of you are probably between 5 and 10. I know some of you are younger, and that's okay. 5 years is a while. 7 years is a while, and it's long enough to gain some maturity as a Christian. And God expects us to do that. Establish high principles of godliness now. Don't wait and think you have time to do it later on. Your conscience may be set like concrete in a few years if you don't do it now. That has happened to so many. I can look back and think about people that I knew who were not very wise in some of the choices that they made in terms of their companions, in terms of who they chose to marry, in terms of where they went in life. And some of them had made disasters of their lives. And many of them were just like you. Some of them actually sat right in here. And they've made disasters in their lives. The decisions you're making now, some of you in 5 or 10 years, some of you in 10 years, many of you may be parents. You'll be setting the spiritual tone for your family. You're going to have little children who are dependent upon you to set that tone. So choose wisely now. Choose wisely now. Last few thoughts. I'm a little over time. I hope that's okay. We have an appointment with death. And I know we've already read Ecclesiastes 11. Hebrews 9, where once appointed a man to die, then comes the judgment. Don't wait. Don't think you've got plenty of years to get things straightened out. Remember, man's purpose. Fear God and keep His commandments. This is the whole of man. Are there any questions? I know I talked fast and I talked a lot. I appreciate your good attention. I hope you'll really listen well to the things that I hope you did last night. I hope you will for the rest of the day, because these things are very important and they will help you. It'll help you in life and help you choose wisely and ultimately help you go to heaven. Thank you.